It's time for conversations about our food and how it's grown on Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.
There are so many issues that people can be concerned about, and certainly there are disasters, there are developments, there's all kinds of things. Trade is one that I get the feeling that people are a little concerned and curious, but not sure why that really even matters to them. They might hear about other disasters taking place, and they hear about fires and volcanoes and tornadoes and all sorts of things. And, you know, they feel bad about where it's happening and who it's happening to. Looking at what we claim as a disaster on trade policy, a lot of people scratch their head and say, maybe there's something there I just don't understand. Well, my guest today spends a lot of time on trade issues, and I'm really happy to welcome Josh Rolfe. And Josh is the manager of federal policy for the California Farm Bureau. He's also involved in something called Farmers for Free Trade. Josh, welcome to Farm to Table Talk.
Thank you, Roger. Thanks for having me on.
Well, Josh, try to help people figure out why should trade matter? Why, if you're not a farmer that's being affected, why should you even care what's going on with trade policy?
That's a great question. We live in a day and age where we can go to the supermarket, we can find whatever we're looking for from a fruit, vegetable, nut, produce, meat, packaged, processed, fresh, whatever it is. And they're so affordable, we almost don't think about it. This is my longer way of answering your question, which is trade does matter. It does allow us to have access to all of the bounty that is really unprecedented. There has been no civilization in any previous age that has had the accessibility of foods that we enjoy today, and trade is the reason. So once trade starts to get ruffled a little bit, or if you have a situation like today where tariffs and trade wars and disputes are now becoming the norm, that can disrupt what we find in the grocery store, the price we pay, the products that we expect to be there. And so for consumers, trade really does matter.
Now, some consumers are buying from all kinds of different sources. I mean, they're eating out, they're going to supermarkets, but they're also going to farmers markets too. I'm curious, does an international trade issue, does it have any implications, do you think, for local food supplier, if they think, well, it's too bad about this, but I'm buying everything locally, you know, or a lot of it locally. Are there any implications for other segments of agriculture, even if they're not global?
There certainly are. This is where I become an armchair economist, and don't have exact numbers, so this could be easily disputed, but it's my take, having watched this for many years, that the farmers who are selling to the farmers markets, one thing that many don't realize is a lot of these farmers that do sell to farmers markets are diversified. That's one part of their business. They might do a you-pick operation, where allowing families to come to a farm and pick their own goods. It's all part of the diversity of their business and their enterprise. But the statistic that I fall back on is that right now in California, at least, we are exporting one out of every $2 we produce. And while there might be some farmers who are exclusively small and local and selling to the local farmers market or restaurant, there are many, many who are exporting and rely on that as part of their business.
You know, it's good you point that out, because I've been spending more time back in the Midwest, and I'm down in the Ohio Valley a lot lately, and talking to farmers down there that, in fact, are supplying the local farmers market, but They also have commodity crops like soybeans and corn and that are being hit by some of these trade wars. And you're right. It takes a lot of things. And for many of them, it includes a part-time job off the farm in addition to a commodity crop and in addition to doing farmers market. And they maybe do a CSAs. Anyway, it takes a lot of things to put together an income for a household.
I find that to be the case with all of our, so we are the largest farming organization in California. We have about 40,000 members, 30,000 of which are almost exclusively farmers. But many, many, many of them are subsidizing their time and effort and passion for agriculture with a side job to pay the bills. And being a farmer today, it takes a lot of work, and you've got to produce a lot in California to remain viable and sustainable. And one of those necessary elements in a business plan is trade.
So if you have that combination to be able to feed your family and so forth, the combination of commodities and, like I say, maybe a part-time job and a couple, maybe at least one person is having to work off the farm. And here in California, instead of having corn and soybeans, you may have almonds. Yep. And so you may have 20 acres or 30 acres or something of almonds, but you're counting on that income as well. And that's where it starts getting back into, I think, the relevance of these trade wars. Again, I think maybe people's eyes glaze over a little bit when they hear about it, because they, is this really a war? Just picking up from what you see at the front of newspapers, that we declared that we were going to put tariffs on China and other products, and then they start retaliating. When did this start? I mean, this is just within this last, pretty much in this last year that we've, that this whole elevation of declaring, you know, a war on trade and the retaliation. Help me explain my way out of this.
Yeah. Yes. You're right. This is, I would call it a trade war. I don't know if my organization would call it a trade war just yet. There is some hesitancy to go all in and call it a war. It would definitely be characterized as a trade dispute. I have to go back about 7-8 years to the Mexican tariff situation, to the last point that we had what you could also call a trade dispute or trade war between the U.S. and Mexico. It was over a trucking issue. And since then, we've had, you know, President Obama was able to push through some Bush-written trade deals in Korea, Colombia, and I believe Peru. And then since then, the Trans-Pacific Partnership was being negotiated. I don't know if you could call those trade wars or trade disputes, because they were negotiations that were being drafted. The trade dispute slash war of today can be traced to our president, Donald Trump. And that's really what started all of this, is his very aggressive and very bold and very new campaign of tariffs. And I think it all starts and begins really with him.
Well, you know, the irony I find is that he claims to be against taxes and has, you know, said how we have to reduce taxes, and there isn't anything more a tax than tariffs. Tariffs are taxes.
That's right.
And we try to tax others on what they're bringing into this country, and they turn around and tax us. So in the course of all this, we're having a huge tax impact.
Correct.
That's affecting consumers and affecting farmers and affecting anybody that has to do not only with food, but I think that, you know, canned goods and other products that affect food in that way as well.
Mm-hmm. That's for sure. You know, we're all enjoying, or hopefully most of us are enjoying, some tax cuts from that were passed last December in Congress, signed into law by the president. He has, and Republicans, I think, are counting on this to be a winner for them in the upcoming election. But Like you said, and I totally agree, tariffs are a tax. We can impose it on another country, but it's in their full rights within the WTO to tax back. And that's what we're seeing now.
You know, I had a conversation with you a little over a year ago about the Trans-Pacific before Trump pulled the plug on that. But that was an attempt to get everybody at the table. And if that had gone through, you would have had China at the table and you would have had all the Asian countries and try to find some sensible way forward to find compromises and adjust it a little bit with, you know, without having an extreme reaction. The public wasn't responding very well to that because it was hard to understand, even though we had a great podcast on it. Josh, I think
we should have turned it. Yeah.
and NAFTA is kind of the same way. I mean, NAFTA could be different, and there's issues that people have had with the North American free trade, but it's always been built around everybody could get around the table and let's work this out. Let's try to find a framework, and agriculture certainly been at those tables.
Yes.
Yep. When you end up just having a large tariff, say like aimed at China right now, then they turn around and say, okay, well, we're going to go after any of the products that look like it'll get your attention and hurt you as much as you're going to hurt us. And a lot of them has been food.
A lot of it is food. They, you know, we're definitely not the only industry or sector in the economy that's being tariffed by China, but we certainly are carrying a large portion of the load. It is true that, you know, when we negotiate with other nations, we're in such a unique position as the United States of America, producing the level of goods in a multi variety of sectors that we don't fully appreciate in America, the impact that agriculture has worldwide. So that when we negotiate with other nations where agriculture might be number 4, 5, or 6 as far as sectors go from our negotiator standpoint, because of how we are a smaller part of the nation's GDP, for other nations like China, agriculture is everything. And so they want to push back on agriculture. It benefits their own farmers, and they know that it will hurt our farmers, because unlike other sectors that can become multinational conglomerates but still based in America, farmers are stuck where they're stuck, and we can only grow where we grow. And so, and I think that the president has noticed that, especially in his latest announcement, wanting to provide some aid to farmers as opposed to you know, other industries have said, well, wait, what about us? But there is definitely something to that agriculture, when you poke agriculture, we hurt the most.
Well, and it's interesting, too. Some people are saying, boy, I bet those farmers are happy. They're going to get $12 billion. Do you run into any farmers that are happy to possibly receive subsidies like that?
I don't know of anyone that's happy over this announcement. I think there's an appreciation that agriculture is being listened to. There might be a few out there that feel like they're going to benefit out of this, but I think the vast majority would rather see a finalization of these trade agreements as opposed to aid. So our mantra has been trade, not aid, meaning let's pursue these deals. Let's get them off the table. Let's wrap up NAFTA. Let's fix this problem with China. Let's prevent future retaliatory actions by the EU and Afghanistan and Turkey. And there's a whole list of countries that are right now ready to go after us. Let's finish that, as opposed to receiving a check from the government.
Well, where did that money come from anyway? I mean, the $12 billion, they didn't need an act of Congress, apparently, to be able to come up with this. Where'd they find that money?
Yeah, it comes from the Commodity Credit Corporation, or the CCC, which has that availability in times of distress or need among agriculture. So in the past, it's been used when there's been a catastrophic drought or flooding. And it allows the Secretary of Agriculture to make purchases of crops that wouldn't otherwise from farmers who've been penalized from these natural disasters or in some cases market developments. And this would be considered a market development. I don't know of a situation in recent years where the CCC has been drawn from in order to help farmers. $12 billion is a lot of money. And so we are a little concerned. There should be some interest in where the money's coming from and why and how it's being used.
Well, and if these trade wars continue, it's not going to be enough anyway. I mean, even if you could try to pay everybody back, I mean, that we're going to go past the $12 billion in loss pretty quick, as I understand it, at the rate that we're going right now.
Yeah, and it's mostly, and this is something where in California we might have a different take than other states, because most of those funds will go to the Midwest. They will go to soybean, corn, wheat growers, and specialty crop growers like us in California that grow fruits, vegetables, and nuts are going to be will not benefit as much from this total number. And you know, so far they've put out just a sketch of these, how the $12 billion is going to be spent and in which way, but a lot of it is still being developed, and we're working with the administration on ways to do that effectively for more of our growers in California. But yeah, it just scratches the surface. And one of the points, as you raise, that that the $12 billion doesn't even scratch the surface, that this could get worse, is that once you – the way to understand this is if you are exporting to a foreign market, let's say in China, and let's say I'm sending almonds there, I have a special relationship with that buyer overseas. Once these tariffs reach the point, like with almonds, it's going to be over 60% tariff. Now that is going to make it simply unaffordable and undoable for our growers. Then once we stop selling to that partner in China, it's gone. And so $12 billion today in aid might help the first year, but once that relationship overseas is gone, it's gone.
Almonds have a bit of an advantage in that there's not many other places in the world to grow almonds. I mean, there are some, so I'm no doubt there will be some handlers in California who will lose business to a handler in Australia.
Right.
Where they do grow almonds. But some of these other commodities, if you got Brazil or Argentina, can come in and take it, and they're making the same point. We'll never get it back. They've been working on it for maybe decades, building up those relationships. But once they're gone, they're gone. And to think you can go back in and flip the switch and say, okay, now we're back to business as normal. That's really frustrating. But you can summarize again on how we got into this and then how we get out of it. Is we're not sitting down at the table with talks as had taken place in the past at WTO or GATT or NAFTA and all of these others to try to harmonize world trade. So it's a win-win for farmers and exporters and consumers and all over the world. That has really been damaged because of this arbitrary action. When you get back to, like, one of the big ones is China. And everybody talks about how China seems to be cheating on technology. And so this is apparently trying to get them at the table and saying, if we just whack you with a, you know, huge tariff, then you'll clean up your act like you haven't done up to now. Now, that still seems to be like one of the big themes of where this is all going, is taking, and it's not only China, but China's the big one. And again, with the hope that these are extreme enough that China will say, even though we haven't made as much progress as we should have in the past, you got our attention now. Now we're going to sit down and, you know, let bygones be bygones, and we're all going to work together. That's kind of a simplistic picture of it, is it?
Yeah. You know, there's a strategy involved with this. The president feels like there are some inequities, and there are. I think GAG is first to acknowledge that there are problems everywhere in the world. There are a lot of countries who simply will use their some level of barriers to keep our product out. And so maybe by starting this tariff war, you're going to really wake them up and get them to the table faster and get them to cave and to give in areas that maybe they otherwise would not have. From my perspective, I think that's a little too risky of a way to go about it. And there's got to be a way outside of tariffs and outside of this current trade war to resolve these things.
Yeah, I think you were being a little political there when you said a little too risky, because in your tone up to now, I know many people say this is crazy. This is no way to run a country, no way to run trade issues. So if there are consumers, if there are people just interested in saying that this seems like bad policy, whether or not they could afford to spend more money for their food or not, and farmers that know that they're going to be hurt, what do they do? I mean, if administration is making this decision, are there opportunities for individuals to try to make themselves heard or get, you know, pressures to change this course?
Well, one way that I'll just put in a plug for my organization is to join Farm Bureau. You don't have to be a farmer. And if you are a farmer and are not a member of this organization, then, you know, we are a grassroots organization, and we try to allow the common citizen who's interested in agriculture and the preservation of it in the long term to have a voice. And a collective voice. And there's a powerful voice when Farm Bureau speaks out. You know, the other way is just the checklist of being an activist citizen, which is to call your member of Congress, to write a letter, to tweet to President Trump. He likes Twitter. You know, if there was a campaign with a hashtag to allow consumers to send a message to the president that this is dangerous and we need to be working on better solutions, I think now's the time. And so, you know, we'd have to pull out the advocacy playbook, but it, you know, it all comes down to making sure your members of Congress know and that the president knows your feelings on this issue.
Well, I'm sure that's a way forward. I mean, that's always been an issue, and Farm Bureau does a great job, and I'll say put a plug for a few others. There's other organizations too that are trying to work in the same direction. One of the things that's frustrating though is that you end up seeing the president's gone on cable news and declared how much the farmers are behind him and saying, gee, the farmers know that they're hurt, but they're going to stand with me because they just know we have to fight this battle. And they tell me, President Trump, we're behind you all the way. I haven't found a single farmer that feels that way. Mm-hmm. There may be some. I don't see that kind of support.
He's maybe confusing their support for him in other areas, because I do feel like there is a feeling of, you know, I'll just go back to our national organization's annual meeting, American Farm Bureau. It got some press when President Trump spoke to our farmers at the convention in January in Nashville. I was there kind of as a people watcher and staffer for Farm Bureau, and I was curious how, you know, farmers in the heartland would react to this president. And it was a nothing short of a love fest. Yeah. The media has liked to, you know, try to find the weaknesses out in the countryside, especially with the trade war, anything they can do to poke at the president. But there is a lot, I think farmers, and this is just to speak very generally, because there's a lot who I'm sure don't share these views. But you do find a lot of interest in the way he's doing things, that it's a little disruptive to the norm. And so for him to say farmers love me, that echoes how he communicated in Nashville. He said, I know you all love me. And that got a lot of press because it sounded very arrogant, but it was more of a joke being there in the room. You know, I think he's riding this wave, but it is a wave and waves crash, and he should be careful because farmers at a certain point, if this gets really bad and ugly, which I'm sure it will, if the tariffs stay in place from some of our largest trading partners, then this will not, I think, you know, sometimes relationships end, and I could see that happening over this issue.
So, Josh, just in wrapping up, what's the best case scenario? You look down the road in this, the period in front of us, and you could wave a magic wand and saying, here's how we get our way out of this mess, and how we get, you know, trade back to a stage that is not really threatening to farmers and to consumers. I mean, what's the best case scenario that you can see down the road?
Best case scenario would be that the president lifts these tariff sanctions on these other nations, that they in turn rescind their tariffs, and that we go through negotiations with under a time frame, a strict time frame. I think it can be done fairly quickly to address some of the bigger concerns that many have shared with China and other nations. Short of that, I'm very hopeful that there is some good news around the corner. I do, though, have the concern that these tariffs stay in place for a long period of time. And if that's the case, it will greatly reconfigure or change the way we do business. And that's kind of the, maybe to end on a pessimistic note,
yeah.
But that's kind of the range of options and where I think we are today.
Well, Josh, I have good news. President Trump listens to this podcast, and he thinks this is the best podcast in the history of the world. There's never been good. A better podcast
I
than
don't
this.
Doubt it.
So he'll probably start tweeting and saying, let's support what Josh Rolfe has been saying on Farm to Table Talk. Hey, I want to thank you for joining me in this conversation on trade. It's something that affects really all of us. And even though we don't think it does, like you said, farmers of all sizes and shapes and consumers, whether they're shopping local or supermarkets, are all going to be affected by this. So it's good to pay attention and have your voice be heard. So thank you.
I've enjoyed it. Thank you, Roger.
You've been listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.